Right, Mr. Brown, you have some additional testimony to offer by Mr. Ugarud, I believe. You may proceed.
That's right, Your Honor. If we could return to the question of the Minnesota Commission's decision on Otter Tail's ADP petition in that state, I believe you gave testimony earlier that the earliest date that you think the commission may hear the case is December 15th. Is that correct?
That would be the earliest, yes. No.
And it could possibly be a later commission hearing date than that, right, including into January. And even if the hearing were held on December 15th, would you anticipate having a written order on the 15th or shortly thereafter?
I would not. I would anticipate an oral decision, and then our experience has been that there's a period of time that might be as much as 3 weeks, a month, before we have a written order.
Okay. Thank you. Nothing further, Your Honor.
All right. Commissioner Clark, does that address your question? Yes. Any further questions from the commission? Then, Mr. Grumman, anything further in this respect?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, anything further with regard to the action of the Minnesota Commission?
Thank you. I only wanted to mention on the record that in addition to being evidence of what the Minnesota Commission does in the case in that jurisdiction, that order could have some legal relevance. And I just wanted to be sure the record was clear of that.
It is.
Thank
I don't intend to exclude the relevance of the order. I intend to define its use as evidence.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Ugarud. Next, Mr. Brown.
Your Honor, we would like to call back to the stand Terry Grauman to address the questions regarding what approvals are needed in South Dakota for the project.
Mr. Grauman. Mr. Grauman, you understand, of course, that your testimony continues under oath and subject to penalties of perjury.
I do.
Mr. Brown.
Were you in the room earlier this afternoon when the questions were asked about what approvals were needed for the AQCS project to go forward from the South Dakota state government?
I was.
Okay.
Excuse me.
And would you be able to respond to that question?
I can.
Could you please do so?
Excuse me. Under Administrative Rules of South Dakota, Chapter 743621.11, which I believe is our Attachment 3, there's a requirement in there that we obtain a construction permit from the South Dakota Department of Environment and Natural Resources for purposes of constructing the facilities associated with the air quality control system. In addition to that, we have an obligation under the South Dakota rules that regulate solid waste, which I can't specifically cite right now, that we'll need to go in and modify the solid waste permit that we have for the Big Stone plant that would incorporate the additional flue gas desulfurization waste products going to the current solid waste disposal site at the plant. That permit application is currently out for public comment, and I should mention the construction permit is nearing the public notice stage as well, so we're well along in the permitting process. There are no permits that are required from the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission.
And you, at the beginning of your last response, you referred to Attachment 3. Just for clarification, is that the South Dakota Regional Haze Administrative Rules that's been marked as Exhibit 113 in this case?
That is correct.
Okay. I have nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco? Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco has no questions, I assume. Questions from the commission?
Just very briefly, you had indicated that there are no permits required from the South Dakota PUC. There are no other proceedings that are pending before the PUC, which wouldn't be classified as permit proceedings, but might be other types of of proceedings?
I'm not
regulatory approval as opposed to a permitting process.
Right, I'm not familiar with the other regulatory proceedings. With my comment with respect to the South Dakota PUC was with respect to the comment that had been made with respect to siting permits and things of that nature.
Okay,
that
thank you.
Further questions from the commission? Follow up, Mr. Brown?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Follow up, Mr. Gruen?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next witness, Mr. Brown.
Your Honor, we would like to call Brian Draxton. He did not file any pre-filed testimony in this case, but he would be able to address a number of the issues relating to the IRP and generation issues.
You may proceed. Mr. Draxton, as you heard me advise previous witnesses, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I am required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. You raise your right hand, please. Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Draxton, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Mr. Brown.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Could you please state and spell your first and last name for the record, please?
Yes, my name is Brian, B-R-I-A-N, Draxton, D-R-A-X-T-E-N.
And who is your current employer?
I'm employed by Otter Tail Power Company.
And what is your job there?
My position is manager of resource planning, and in that position, I'm responsible for the preparation of our integrated resource plan, the preparation of our load forecasts, and to ensure that we have enough capacity and energy either owned or under contract to meet our customer needs for electricity.
Thank you. And for the record, can you confirm when Otter Tail filed its most recent IRP in Minnesota?
Yes, it was filed on June 25th of 2010 and updated on September 17th of 2010.
And can you confirm that that document has been offered in the record as Otter Tail 204?
Yes.
Okay. And were you involved in the preparation of the most recent 10-year plan for North Dakota submitted by Otter Tail?
I was, yes.
And that was submitted on July 1st?
Yes.
And has that been marked in this case as Otter Tail Exhibit 203?
Yes.
Okay. Looking first at the IRP in Minnesota, does that document provide any analysis of the proposed AQCS project?
It does. Our way of modeling that, we assumed that that Big Stone plant would be retired at the end of 2015. We then put all of the costs of the AQCS project into our model and allowed the model to select it if it was part of the least cost option. We ran 22 separate scenarios, and in 21 of the 22 scenarios, the Big Stone AQCS project was selected as part of the least cost way to meet our needs.
And what kind of modeling did you use in that?
We use a model called Strategist, which is a capacity expansion modeling. It's, you know, we've got incredible number of assumptions that go into it and all our load forecasts, and it calculates the cheapest way that our company can meet the needs of our customers.
And can you describe the assumptions that were made in that analysis regarding capital cost?
Yes. We used in fact, if you can recall, I said that we filed on June 25th and then updated it September 17th. We had used a number of $400 million for the Big Stone AQCS project. As we got better information, we actually increased that price up to $500 million. So in our 22 scenarios, the capital cost that we used was $500 million, which was considerably higher than what we used here. And it was still selected 21 out of 22 times.
In Otter Tail's IRP modeling, did it take into account the cost of potential carbon regulation?
It did. The IRP, Andy, could you refresh my memory as to the number of that, the exhibit?
I believe it's 204.
Okay, so exhibit 204 on page 5-12. There's a graph that shows the various scenarios that we used, and we had near the bottom there's three that are called low externalities, medium externalities, and high externalities.
Mr. Jackson,
if I could interrupt for a moment. So those items on the left-hand side of this chart are the 21 scenarios that you mentioned just a moment ago?
Correct. Let me just wait a minute.
This was something that wasn't in the notebook, Your Honor. Larger.
I'm aware of it. So again, page 5-12. So on the left side of that graph are very short descriptions of the 22 scenarios that we used in our modeling. And if you look near the bottom, you'll see three that say high externalities, medium externalities, low externalities. Now, those runs included not only CO2, but SO2 and NOx as well. But the low externality included a zero cost for CO2. The medium used $9 a ton, which is the low end of the Minnesota range. And the high externalities used $34 a ton, which is the high end of the prescribed number in Minnesota. And you can see there that all three of those plans were more expensive than our base case at the bottom. But more importantly, each of those plans selected the Big Stone AQCS project as a part of the resources that make up the least cost plan.
Your Honor, we'd like to offer this witness for cross-examination.
Mr. Grumman.
Thank you. Mr. Draxton, you were here for Mr. Rolfs' testimony earlier today?
Yes.
Okay, and so you're familiar with some of my questions concerning load following and et cetera. And just to reiterate, it's my understanding, or what Mr. Rolfs had testified to, is that the capacity factor will decrease with Big Stone for primarily two reasons. One is demand, and then also when wind comes online. You remember that testimony?
I do.
And does that make sense? Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. So our question is that if there's a capacity drag on coal as pursuant to wind, is that accurately reflected in an integrated resource plan?
I would say that it's accurate in that, you know, we would calculate the correct amount of energy coming from our coal plants. However, I believe your question this morning had to do with, do we actually increase O&M costs and things like that on our coal plants? And the answer to that is no, we do not change the O&M rate.
Okay. I mean, another thing that comes to mind, too, is, of course, you have Big Stone, and, of course, you've got those big transmission lines coming out of Big Stone, and those costs associated with that, if wind is coming online, those transmission costs those transmission lines aren't being used. I mean, that type of drag on the system, I mean, how is that reflected in the integrated resource plan?
I would say the transmission example that you just cited is not modeled in our IRP.
Could you define for me the terminology levelized cost?
Well, very similar to what Mr. Kopp had talked about earlier, where you look at the total capital cost and the O&M, both fixed and variable costs, financing over the life of that project, present value them back to the present day and use that same levelized charge over the entire life of the project.
Now, using your own terminology, an integrated resource plan essentially, quote-unquote, uses many assumptions. Is that correct?
That's right.
So would you agree that some of the assumptions are probably incorrect in regard to determining for resource planning wind versus coal?
I would say that since we filed our IRP, since we did the original modeling, things have changed. So would the assumptions be somewhat different today than they were when we filed? Yes.
But in regards to wind, what we had just discussed about some of those costs not being reflected in the integrated resource plan.
again, the resource plan is at a very high level over a very long period of time, and trying to get, you know, very fine, like some of the things you've just described, I may not characterize it as incorrect. I just may characterize it that we haven't gone to that level of detail.
Well, certainly if you use the terminology in the aggregate, in and of itself it may be small, but as more wind comes online, it can be a more significant factor, correct?
It could increase, yes.
Now, looking into the future, I mean, is that something that you as a resource planner are taking into account? As more wind comes online and there are costs that are not associated, is there going to be a reevaluation of the integrated resource plan do you see in the future in this regard?
It's definitely something that we're considering and trying to decide how we will incorporate those costs in future resource planning models.
If you could explain to the commission again, or and for the record for that matter, is there a mandate by the state of Minnesota as far as a certain portion of your generation portfolio that has to be wind?
We have it's an increasing requirement, a renewable energy standard that says ramping up levels of renewable energy, not necessarily wind, just renewables, that we have to be at 25% of our energy by 2025.
So by 2025, it has to be 25%.
Correct.
But you're able to get to that point. As of right now, there is no mandate, but you just have to have 25% by
2025. No, it's stepping up, and I don't know if I can just put my hands on it, but I believe in 2012, we have to be at 11 or 12%. I'm not exactly sure, but it does ramp up to get to 25% by 2025.
I have a moment, Your Honor.
You may.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Questions from the commission? If not, thank you very much, Mr. Draxton. Mr. Brown?
Our next witness is Andrea Stomberg, please, for Montana Dakota Utilities.
Ms. Stomberg, I know you've done this more often than I have, but as necessary, as you know, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. Will you raise your right hand, please? Being advised regarding perjury, Ms. Stomberg, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. Could you state your full name for the record?
Yes, Andrea Stomberg.
And what is your current position at Montana Dakota?
Vice President of Electric Supply.
Can you describe your responsibilities in that position, please?
Sure. I oversee the departments that do the power production, transmission, engineering and planning, system operations and planning, and environmental.
And I believe you're the sponsor of two exhibits today, excuse me. The first one is your rebuttal testimony that's been marked as MDU 301. Is that correct?
Correct.
And the other one is the application from Montana Dakota for the ADP. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that's been marked as Exhibit 302. Could you please provide a summary of your rebuttal testimony, please?
Sure. And I would also, as the first Montana Dakota witness here, have some prefatory comments about this filing. And then, of course, the summary of my rebuttal. The Big Stone plant provides 25% of Montana Dakota's installed generating capacity. The plant provides important fuel and geographic diversity for our system and provides energy at a stable cost to our customers as part of our integrated electric supply. The Big Stone plant, which became operational in 1975, was permitted and constructed with neither sulfur dioxide or nitrogen oxide control equipment. although there was a fuel switch in 1995 which allowed the plant to reduce its SO2 emissions significantly. This plant is in compliance with existing rules and regulations and operates in compliance with its permit. Regulations under the Federal Regional Haze Regulations have been adopted by the state of South Dakota, under which the plant will be required to install pollution control equipment. The plant owners have been involved in the selection of the best control technology through a lengthy process of analysis and have worked closely with the South Dakota Department of Natural Resources, which is the regulating agency. The time frame for compliance is tight given the complexity of this project. At the same time, the entire fossil-fueled electric generation industry is under pressure. I'm sorry. I thought I was doing a little slower than I... Sorry. Okay, I just back up to where paragraph break here. At this same time, we good there? The entire fossil fuel-fired electric generation industry is under pressure from the EPA to install upgrades and improved air pollution control equipment, often under very aggressive timelines. The number of regulatory initiatives that will drive plant upgrades is expected to increase pressure on engineering firms, equipment suppliers, and craft labor needed for design and installation. While it is hard to quantify the impact of this expected competition for equipment and labor, it is an important consideration in the cost of the entire project. Clarity from this commission of their support for the project through the approval of this request for an advanced determination of prudence, even if some of the regulatory and scheduling considerations are pending administrative process, is essential and will give the owners the best opportunity to manage the cost of the project and ensure that the plant is fully compliant when required to be by the rules. Clearly, this project is very significant to our customers. Our analysis suggests that the expenditures to bring the plant into compliance with these rules will be cost-effective compared to alternatives. Also, Montana Dakota believes that these planned upgrades will allow the plant to be in compliance with foreseen environmental regulations and thus continue to serve our customers for many years. In my rebuttal testimony, I addressed the conditions proposed by Mr. Richard Hahn, who testified on behalf of the PSC's advocacy staff. Mr. Hahn proposed three conditions. First, Mr. Hahn proposed an advanced determination of prudence be conditional upon EPA approval of the South Dakota State Implementation Plan. As explained in my rebuttal testimony, Montana Dakota does not object to this condition, provided it does not delay issuance of the advanced determination of prudence until after the EPA approval is issued. While we expect the approval to be issued in the near future, Montana Dakota is concerned that any delay in issuance of the ADP could result in a significant delay in the completion of the AQCS project if the project owners perceive the risk of non-recovery of expenditures. Second, Mr. Hahn proposed the prudence determination of total project costs be limited to $585 million, which is 10% more than the current estimated cost. Montana Dakota does not oppose this condition. The company understands that an ADP is not a determination for rate-making purposes, that all costs actually incurred are reasonable. We also understand that the ADP does not establish either a cap or a floor for rate-making purposes. In other words, a project determined prudent in this ADP proceeding would not necessarily be held imprudent at a later cost recovery case simply because its capital cost exceeded the company's current best estimates of the costs of the project. We recognize that the burden will be on the company to justify the actual expenditures. Third, Mr. Hahn proposed the applicants submit periodic cost reports to the commission, and Montana Dakota does not object to this condition. Mr. Hahn also testified that the cost for mercury control should be excluded from the prudence order, at least until the promulgation of the final utility-MACT rule. Montana Dakota does not object to a condition that inclusion of the mercury controls is conditioned upon finalization of these rules. Thank you.
Thank you, and we offer this witness for cross-examination.
Mr. Grumman.
Thank you. I just have one question in particular. Kind of setting this up, concerning the ACI technology and its implementation into the AQCS project as anticipated, there seemed to be somewhat of a contradiction. In your rebuttal testimony, you indicated that, quote-unquote, there will be efficiencies gained with the installation of mercury controls concurrently with the AQCS that will overall reduce costs of the mercury control installation. Later on in a discovery request, your company responded it indicated that if installed separately, you would not expect the cost to be significantly different. So there seems to be somewhat of a perhaps a difference here, and I was hoping you could just reconcile that for the record.
Sure. I think it was, and maybe I misheard you, Otter Tail's testimony that indicated they didn't think that later installation would be significantly different. I said that I thought there would be some efficiencies. And in both cases of those statements, if I've read them correctly, those are qualitative and not meant to be quantitative analyses of any cost savings that would come from doing the ACI installation approximately the same time the rest of the project was done. And I would stand by that because I do believe that while difficult to quantify, maybe not huge, when you have craft labor on hand, when you have laydown areas taking outlined for other parts of this project, you're going to have some efficiencies by doing that project at the same time rather than having to remobilize folks, find craft labor, get an area set up for work for the installation. So I do believe, while perhaps not quantifiable or large, there will be efficiencies gained in doing the project at the same time.
If I understand you correctly, the best approach is concurrent with AQCS as far as installation of the mercury controls. Would that be correct? That would be your most likely best-case scenario?
Yeah, I would think so.
Okay. Now, how about pre-AQCS? Would that be the worst-case scenario?
Say again.
If you were to install the mercury control equipment, say, before the AQCS project.
I don't know if it would be really worst-case, but it would be, I think, slightly more expensive than if you did it in conjunction with the other projects.
So now using those in relation then, if rather than concurrently with the AQCS project, if the ACI...
Oh, you're fast.
Wow. All right. Where would you like me to start again?
My name is Mark.
Wow.
Okay. I'm glad it's not just me.
Concurrence best. Pre-AQCS is worse than that situation. Now, let's talk about the type of scenario whereby the ACI were to be installed. If the AQCS were to be installed and then the ACI afterwards, I mean, how much of a differentiation would that be as far as costs associated?
I certainly haven't tried to quantify that. Again, the logical qualitative conclusion is if you got people on site doing the same kind of work, you don't have to remobilize them. So there will be, at a minimum, some remobilization if it's not done at the same time as another project. Now, there may be other projects where we'd have the same kind of labor in that's not the AQCS where we could nudge it in. However, I think it's been stated here, we fully believe that MACT will be coming along real soon here and that the timing will be pretty well the same as with the AQCS.
Very good. I have no further questions.
Thank you.
Is Jeff Kotsacko.
You heard me ask Otter Tail about putting in your own words, what is the question the commission has to answer in order to decide this case? Could you do that, please, for MDU?
Well, I'm glad I got a chance to think about that, but I think the question is fairly straightforward. It really, I think, is the upgrade of the Big Stone plant with the AQCS in the best interest of our customers based on the known information at this time versus plant abandonment or closure?
Would MDU proceed if there is either no decision anytime soon from the commission or a negative decision anytime soon from the commission? Would MDU still proceed to do this upgrade in the best interests of the customers?
I do not think Montana Dakota would undertake this large of an investment with any sort of signal from this commission that they didn't think it was prudent.
Because, fill in, if it's the right thing to do for your company and your customers, you're under an obligation to do it. So you would not do it without the signal because...
Because it would be significant detriment to our company if we were unable to recover those costs. The risk is huge. I don't know that our board would approve it.
Okay. Thank you.
Questions from the commission?
I'll start.
Commissioner Call.
So, Andrew, you heard me talking to Ward, perhaps?
I tried to listen, yes.
So you don't buy when I say that if we don't do this, that doesn't mean we won't approve it down the road? You don't buy that statement?
Going back and saying let's pretend that we would go ahead with it and we would argue our best case. We absolutely would argue the best case. However, the rule is on the books, and this is a significant capital expenditure. And I think our board would be hard pressed to understand why we'd proceed if you commissioners who are pretty smart and understand this stuff said, we just don't think this is necessary. We don't think this is necessarily in the best interest of your customers.
I guess that's where we part ways, and some of that just a philosophical discussion we will probably continue to have about the law. But the walk me through again, how many megawatts of power do you get from Big Stone 1?
It's about 25% of our installed baseload capacity, and I think we get about 25% of our energy from there. It might be a little more than that, but about 25% of our energy comes from Big Stone.
So what's that number again, roughly? I mean,
have about 2.4 million megawatt hours that are retail sales, so about 25% of that.
So the plant is 475 megawatts, give or take. How much of that is yours?
A little over 110, kind of depends on what your capacity is at the moment.
So as long as we're just talking...
22.7%.
Okay, so we're... A whole different set of thoughts just comes to mind. So we're saying that a 16% cost increase justifies that additional 22 megawatts, if we take that to the strategic thought, I guess.
I'm not sure I understand your comment.
Because the cost of this project is 16% increase in rates to end customers.
Right.
So we're saying that the best use of 16% of ratepayer dollars comes down to upgrading this facility to keep those projects online, or this project online.
I would say that is what our analysis has indicated, yes.
So in the whole review, we looked at all those projects or things that could be done with Big Stone 2. Where's the review that says scrap everything down there, build something new in North Dakota at a cost of whatever that number turns out to be?
Well, in our IRP, and as will be addressed by Mr. Nigam, we analyze the cost of new coal, the cost of combined cycle, the cost of simple cycle CTs, new coal in an IGCC plant, because we think that's the only thing that could be built against this upgrade.
What I'm saying is that the...
Maybe I'm not tracking.
No, I'm just throwing some thoughts out there. You have an application in front of the commission for advanced determination of prudence on this project to do these things. And so we're asked to look at that based on the facts. But that's the job. I think the job of Mr. McFarland and Mr. Gooden is to look at all those things that could be of all the different arrays. And that's why I say just because this – I might not vote for an ADP mm-hmm. doesn't mean that it wouldn't be included down the road, doesn't mean that something else might not come up. That's the part I think that gets very challenging in this mm-hmm. case. I don't know. I think it's a stretch of the people making the case today trying to say, Commission, if you don't approve this ADP, this is dead. That's what I think the tone that I'm seeing developing that I don't think is appropriate. Mm-hmm. That's just my thought. So do you have any thoughts back to that? I mean, is it?
Well, I guess I would say in all candor that I do believe that we would have an extraordinarily hard push internally to justify this if the commission that is oversees 65% of our customers, if you will, if you understand what I'm saying there, says they're not sure that this is a prudent project. I guess I can't say at this point in time we wouldn't ultimately decide that we have to take that risk.
So you go back to the board and they say, nope, then where does MDU go to?
Well, then we have to go in and look at our alternatives and come back to you with a project saying, if you didn't feel that was prudent, we need to look at other alternatives, and they'd come to you with those.
Sure. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Further questions from the commission? Commissioner Kramer.
Which you're kind of doing right now, because you're going to offer up all of the alternatives that you studied and modeled,
correct.
And this
correct.
Came out low cost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I have nothing further.
What? Commissioner Clark.
I'm just sort of playing out scenarios, playing the game that Commissioner Kalk was, where, I mean, one order could be written in such a way, in theory, that didn't deem it imprudent. You just said we're declining to grant prudence. Now, the position, that would put the board in a difficult position. I understand the MDU board would have to make a call at that point. But I suppose option B, C, and D that MDU would come back with may actually be deemed imprudent, which would be a different decision then. I mean, does that make any sense?
It would be a long, costly, and convoluted process, I think.
Thanks, that's all I have.
Further questions from the commission? Commissioner?
Well, I'll just make a statement without the microphone on. I don't think we're going to deem it crazy. But, I mean, if we're going to carry out scenarios, right? I mean, I don't think we're going to sit here and say, this is the craziest idea I've ever heard.
I hope not.
No. Nothing further.
Any further questions from the commission? Follow up, Mr. Brown?
No follow up, Your Honor.
Mr. Grohman?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Domberg.
Thank you.
Mr. Brown?
Your Honor, our final witness is Darcy Nigam.
Mr. Nigam, as you have heard me say countless times before, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. You raise your right hand, please. Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Nigam, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Mr. Brown.
Good afternoon, Mr. Nigam.
Good afternoon.
Could you please state your full name for the record?
Yes, Darcy Nigam.
And what is your position at Montana Dakota?
I'm the System Operations and Planning Manager for Montana Dakota Utilities.
Can you describe your general responsibilities in that position?
Sure. I'm responsible for the day-to-day operations of our company's electric control center and also our system operations and planning group, which is responsible for our resource planning activities, as well as load forecasts and also transmission studies that we do.
And I believe you're the sponsor of three of the exhibits today. Is that correct?
Yes.
Those include your rebuttal testimony that's been marked as MDU 303.
Yes.
And also MDU 304, which is the Montana Dakota Exhibit 4 to the application, the assessment of pending environmental regulations to the Big Stone plant.
Yes.
Can you briefly describe what that document entails for the record?
That assessment is just a summary of the Big Stone resource itself, how it's used and useful to Montana, Dakota, and also describes the process we went through with our integrated resource plan that we recently filed with this commission, and as far as the results of that analysis.
And the third exhibit, I believe, has been marked as MDU 305. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that's a copy of the company's 2011 IRP?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a summary to offer of your rebuttal testimony?
Yes, I do.
Would you please proceed?
In Montana, Dakota's 2011 Integrated Resource Plan, we looked at available alternatives to the Big Stone air quality control system upgrades and developed the least cost plan to meet our company's future demand and energy requirements. The Integrated Resource Plan modeling was performed separately from the Burns and McDonald study work and looked at various scenarios, including high and low natural gas prices, high capital costs for the Big Stone AQCS project, and also a high capital cost scenario for combustion turbines, as well as high and low customer growth scenarios, demand response and energy efficiency programs, carbon tax scenarios, which looked at a $30 and $50 per ton cost, and we also looked at a high environmental case. In all these scenarios, the Big Stone air quality control system upgrade was selected as a least cost resource. Screening modeling that we did for a request for proposal from 2010 showed that with a retirement of the Big Stone plant in 2015, that the levelized system rate and present value of revenue requirements for modeling activities would go up by 6% for the next least cost alternative, which selected a wind and gas combination as a replacement for the Big Stone plant. In my rebuttal testimony, I discussed how Montana Dakota's 2011 Integrated Resource Plan modeling assumptions differed from those pointed out by Mr. Hahn. Regarding the issue of stranded costs, Montana Dakota's modeling analysis in our Integrated Resource Plan assumed the existing Big Stone plant would be retired in 2015 and a new resource for the Big Stone plant with the air quality control system project was available as a new supply side option at the forecasted installed cost with the future operation and maintenance and fuel costs for the plant. There were no dollars assigned with the 2015 retirement of the existing Big Stone plant. These dollars were considered sunk costs in our modeling analysis. Regarding the MISO energy prices and purchases, Montana Dakota made up to 30 megawatts of MISO energy purchases available as a supply-side energy resource in our integrated resource plan, which represents the annual amount of energy that the company historically purchases from the MISO energy market. Montana Dakota did not model a replacement alternative to the Big Stone plant that relied heavily on market purchases, because market purchases are the most unreliable means of securing future customer requirements. As a supply-side option, future market prices place the exposure of fluctuations associated with energy prices on customers. Over the past 3 years, the Big Stone plant has supplied 25% of Montana Dakota's customers' annual energy requirements, and relying on market energy purchases to replace Big Stone plant would likely increase our customers' exposure to market fluctuations to over 30%. To determine MISO energy prices, Montana Dakota's modeling used internally forecasted energy prices based on historical prices and also future market conditions that could affect pricing. These internally developed forecasts have been relatively accurate as compared to actual market energy purchases in recent years. Montana Dakota's forecasted MISO energy prices are higher than the energy prices forecasted by Mr. Hahn, who used an average market heat rate and a Henry Hub gas forecast to develop his MISO energy price forecast. Montana Dakota's MISO energy forecast more accurately reflects the prices that Montana Dakota is likely to pay when we are a buyer of energy from the market. Regarding wind, Montana Dakota modeled supply-side wind generation resources as either a purchase power agreement or as a self-built option at the pricing that Montana Dakota received in our 2010 request for proposals, or based on the company's experience with installed cost of wind generation projects. The PPA pricing accounted for the value of the federal production tax credits in its offered energy price. The prices quoted by Mr. Hahn for the Bison 2 and 3 wind projects seem low compared to other wind projects in the area, due at least in part to Minnesota Power's assumption of a 35-year life for those projects. Also, the wind prices for Bison 2 and 3 are based on a levelized revenue requirement and not an actual revenue requirement.
Mr. Nagum, were you in the room this morning when the questions were being asked about load following?
Yes, I was.
And could you explain from MDU's perspective how you go about determining when to have the coal plants back down in favor of wind?
Our generation is all offered into the MISO energy market. So on an economic basis, MISO is determining which generators, based upon offered prices, that they will dispatch as far as for reliability purposes and also economic purposes. So if there are situations when our coal plants are being backed down and we're purchasing energy from the market, Those are situations when our customers are benefiting from lower cost energy that's available to them, rather than to self-supply it from some other resource that may be marginally higher. So from a load following standpoint, we don't make decisions based upon our generation, other than the fact for coal, we basically will offer them in at what our must run is, or at the minimum load for the coal. But beyond that, the MISO energy market determines what the dispatch levels for those resources will be on an economic basis.
Thank you. We offer this witness, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman.
One moment, Your Honor. Thank you. Mr. Niagara, of course, you were here for my earlier questioning of Mr. Rolfus. That's correct?
Yes.
And also Mr. Draxton?
Yes, I was.
So I understand that you somewhat touched on this subject just prior here, but again, I'd just like to ask the same questions. And I'll reiterate, Mr. Rolfus had indicated that the capacity changes in the Big Stone plant due to demand, and also he included as wind is coming online. So our question from advocacy staff is that when wind is drying down that capacity factor for coal, does the integrated resource plan accurately reflect those negative changes to coal as a result of wind?
I would say similar to what the actual market does as far as dispatching generation on an economic basis, the modeling will do the same thing. So as we're looking at our future resource modeling, it's taking a look at the resources that we have and as far as other supply resources that it may pick, and it goes along and it dispatches them on a most economic basis. And so we're in a situation, even when we look at wind, if it happens to be backing coal down, there's energy that's at a less expense in the market than we could produce ourselves. So our customers are receiving the benefits at those times. And the modeling would do sort of a similar reflection as far as it will dispatch on a most economic basis.
So it's your opinion that the IRP is correct in that regard, that there are no wrong assumptions, for lack of better words?
I can't think of any changes that we would make in our modeling and our integrated resource plan based upon the testimony that was given in this case today.
One moment, Your Honor. Mr. Nigam, under a situation where there were excessive cycling in the coal plant, would that be reflected in the IRP concerning wind?
We've not made any adjustments as far as in our modeling assumptions or cost that deals with the cycling of our facilities. When you look at that, you know, there ends up being a short-term effect and a long-term effect. And certainly the short-term effect that is noted in the modeling does deal with any differences in heat rates, depending how the resources are modeled. And so we end up seeing that at least as effect today when that gets back on the economic side. What's the most economic resource that's being dispatched as far as to meet customer requirements? On the long-term side, we haven't seen any sort of history from our units that would show that there's increased maintenance costs specific or increased numbers of outages or equipment failures that we could quantitatively assign a value to basically add into the model for turndown effects.
When you say you can't quantitatively assign a value to, could you expand upon that? I mean, are we talking something that's so infinitesimal that it doesn't have an overall effect on your integrated resource plan? Or if you could please elaborate.
And, you know, I think what I've heard previously today in the discussion of is there a cost or an effect as far as for cycling resources, certainly there is likely to be an effect to that. One ends up being on the heat rate that we account for in the cost of fuel. The other point ends up being, is there any additional maintenance cost? One of the ways that occurs, if you have additional cycling, does it account for additional outages? Is there additional equipment failure? Or is there other sorts of costs that are incurred because of that turndown? And I think from the history that we've seen based upon the wind, at least in the market and competing, for generation to get to market, we haven't seen an increase that we've quantifiably be able to see that says this is a cost impact that that wind is causing on our resources.
Just one moment, Your Honor. I may continue, Your Honor. The same analysis, it's our, at least what I'm understanding is that for the dispatch of energy, you're looking at just MDU in particular, not the MISO system as a whole, correct?
From, you're talking about when we do our resource planning models.
Yeah, correct. I mean, I guess what we're more specifically getting at is whether or not, whether from a pinpoint area, just like MDU, or from a MISO-wide area, whether or not the negative effects of wind, if that's properly being properly part of the system-wide. And so from that end of it, we're just curious, if you expand it from MDU on to a MISO system-wide, are there negative effects by wind as far as an overall capacity factor on coal?
I guess from our side, inside the modeling, you know, the energy that we get from wind is about 10%. At least, actually, it's about 7-8% of our energy that actually comes from wind resources for our customers' requirements. So it ends up to be at least a smaller portion as we end up doing our modeling activities that we have. And so the only way that, that markets, you know, work into that is at least the amount of market energy, at least that's, you know, available for in the model to basically select. I'm not aware of any studies that have been done by others who have a higher, you know, requirement of wind energy that they have and what effect that has on their resources.
Okay. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Is Jeff Coatsacko?
No questions.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Kalk.
Just a question, a refresh my memory, Dorsey. What generation sources do you share with Otter Tail other than Big Stone?
Big Stone and Coyote.
Those are the only two, right?
Correct.
Okay. And okay, that's it. Thank you.
Further questions? Commissioner Kramer.
With regard to the issue of any possible negative consequence of wind to the rest of the fleet, I mean, would it be fair to say it might be a little early to even determine that, given wind's relative youth in the big scheme of things, and maybe 10 years from now, might there be more data and experience and even anecdote to draw some possible conclusions?
I would say that's a possibility as far as, you know, the short-term effects versus the long-term effects, that there may be something down the road that, you know, that comes out or becomes more to light.
And where I'm going with that is this has been brought up earlier, the production tax credit is, you know, due to expire at the end of next year. Likelihood of its renewal, I would say, is, you know, getting less likely probably, for all the reasons that have been stated earlier, not the least of which is our budgetary concerns about our country. This is, you know, I guess a policy statement slash question, but perhaps a little time to see how the investment to this point in this emerging technology plays out might not be such a bad idea. You don't have an opinion one way or the other, or just rather not offer one?
I think that kind of depends on each company as far as what their position is and what their needs and requirements, you know. But certainly I think, you know, if the production tax credits are not extended, that will certainly have kind of a, you know, a slight chilling effect at least on, you know, the growth of wind industry for a while.
All right. Nothing else. Thank you. Very good.
Further questions from the commission? Follow-up, Mr. Brown?
No follow-up, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeff Coatsacko?
No.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nagum. Mr. Brown, this concludes your presentation.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman, how long do you anticipate Mr. Hahn's testimony to be?
I would say within, from my end of it at least, probably 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Shouldn't be too long. And then I guess dependent upon whatever cross there may be.
My question is, I did not plan to extend this hearing beyond 5 o'clock. I rather assumed, imprudently it appears, that we would continue over to tomorrow morning. I'm certainly willing to, I'll go as long as it takes to finish this hearing, but the point is, we have people here who I don't think have planned to anticipate going past 5 o'clock, and I don't want to start Mr. Hahn's testimony and not finish it, at least minimally the direct, but this present situation, unless we have a general consensus that we should continue until we finish, then I would adjourn now until tomorrow morning, but I would just as lief at the same time finish. So, Mr. Brown, what's your advice?
Your Honor, I can indicate that I think I'll have limited questioning for this witness, and so I don't think we would prevent us from finishing certainly by 5 o'clock.
All right. Have we got a court reporter a few minutes after 5 o'clock? I would say a few minutes, never more than that.
Depends on how fast everybody goes.
Right. Commissioners, should we finish the hearing?
That'd be my preference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Commissioner, you're outvoted anyway, Commissioner Clark, Commissioner Clark at this point. All right, let's proceed.
Advocacy staff calls Richard Hahn.
Mr. Hahn, as you have heard me advise previous witnesses, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I am required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. Will you raise your right hand, please? Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Hahn, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman.
Thank you. Mr. Hahn, could you please state your name for the record?
Yes. First name Richard, middle initial S, last name Hahn, H-A-H-N.
And what's the purpose of your presence here today?
LaCapra Associates, the company I work for, was retained by the advocacy staff to perform a review of the application. I was assigned to be the project manager by LaCapra Associates, and I supervised all of the work necessary to perform our analysis and prepare my testimony, and I'm here today to sponsor that testimony.
And just for the record, that testimony is at ADV-401, which is in the record. That is the public redacted version. There's also a unredacted version, and that's 401-A. Proceeding on, you had indicated that you've prepared pre-filed testimony. Could you please summarize that pre-filed testimony for us?
Surely. Based on my review of the company's application, I conclude that the AQCS is the preferred option for compliance with South Dakota's proposed implementation of the regional haze rule. This project is the least cost acceptable option that I analyzed. I do note that I recommend that approval of the granting of the ADP, if I could use that acronym, would be subject to some recommended conditions. One is the, has been noted by other witnesses, one is the finalization of the South Dakota SIP, its final approval by EPA. I've also recommended that there be what I would refer to as a soft cap on costs of $585 million, where if the project did cost more than that, the company would be
obliged, or the companies would be obliged to come in and explain the basis for any amounts above that. And also that I recommend certain reporting requirements, progress reports be filed by the companies based on testimony that I heard previous today by witnesses for the applicants. It would appear that those conditions are largely acceptable to the applicants. I would note that my analysis showed a much narrower gap between the AQCS and the next best alternative, much lower than what the applicants had proposed. I've heard the testimonies of Mr. Kopp and Ms. Stromberg and Mr. Nigam. I won't go into the details, but I guess I'll summarize by saying that I stand by the changes in assumptions that I included in my direct testimony. But we, despite the fact that the gap is narrowed, I do reach the conclusion that the AQCS is the preferred option study.
Very good. Do you have anything else you'd like to discuss today? Is there anything you'd like to?
Not at this time.
Okay. Otherwise, as indicated, all of Mr. Hahn's testimony has been in pre-filed, and I'll just the state rest subject to redirect, and I'll open him up for cross-examination, or advocacy staff, excuse me.
Mr. Brown.
Good afternoon, Mr. Hahn.
Good afternoon, Mr. Brown.
I think you just testified, and I think you said the same thing in your rebuttal testimony at page 3, that you do find that the proposed project is prudent and reasonable. Is that correct?
Yes, but I think you said rebuttal testimony. I did not.
I'm sorry.
I did not have the opportunity to provide rebuttal testimony. It's my direct testimony.
Pardon me. You're accurate about that. But in your pre-filed testimony at page 3, I believe that you found that the proposed project is prudent and reasonable. Is that correct?
Well, I found it to be the preferred option for compliance. So those are the words that are stated on lines 12 through 14 of page 3. Okay.
And do you deem that to be prudent and reasonable in terms of the ADP statute in North Dakota?
Subject to the conditions that I have proposed, yes, sir.
Okay. And I think also at page 3 of your pre-filed testimony, and again at page 19, I think you found that the proposed AQCS was based on reasonable emission technologies. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, as contained in the South Dakota SIP. Yes, sir.
Okay. And by the South Dakota SIP, you're referring to what I believe has been marked as Otter Tail MDU 111. Is that correct? There's a copy of it in one of those red wells there. Should probably in the first one if you'd like to take a look at it.
Yes.
And I believe also in your pre-filed testimony at page 20, you found that the estimated cost for the proposed AQCS are comparable to other projects. Is that correct? Other similar projects?
I believe that's a fair characterization of that testimony, Mr. Brown.
Mr. Hahn, one of the points you also make is with regard to the price of wind, and you called attention to the Bison 2 and 3 projects. Do you recall that testimony?
Yes, sir.
Do you have any other specific projects to call our attention to support your contentions regarding the likely future cost of wind?
Give me a moment, Mr. Brown. Well, yes, we do reference the on page 15 of my testimony. We reference an analysis done by the Lawrence Berkeley National Labs.
Okay. But my question was whether or not there were any other specific wind projects that you were relying upon, not the study from the National Lab, but any other specific projects like Bison 2 and 3.
I don't recall any specific projects. There were other capital cost estimates, but no specific projects.
And when you provided your testimony regarding the price of wind, did you consider the cost of wind for recent projects, wind projects undertaken by Montana, Dakota?
I think that was one of the price points that there was some, I vaguely recall some PPA data that we had that was looked at by folks at La Capra that I reviewed, yes.
So could you be more specific in terms of how you drew upon that to estimate the cost of wind?
Well, I think, you know, we looked at all the available information. Clearly, the Bison projects seemed important to consider because they were real projects, as you said. I think, you know, there are other generic estimates of capital costs that may be slightly different, but what we tended to do, what I tended to do, was look at all of this information and try to make the best judgment that I could as to what capital costs for wind would be, and that's reflected in my testimony. Mm-hmm.
But you don't recall any specific projects undertaken by MDU with regard to wind that you took into account in your analysis?
I don't, as I said before, Mr. Brown, I don't recall specific projects.
And how about any specific wind projects undertaken by Otter Tail Power?
My answer would be the same.
Okay. Mr. Hahn, I think you've been here for everyone's testimony today. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Including Mr. Kopp's testimony. And he testified at one point, and I believe it was in his rebuttal testimony, that one of the things that they did at Burns and Mac to check on the accuracy of the fuel forecast was they took into account an updated Wood Mackenzie coal and gas forecast from April of 2011. Do you recall that testimony?
I recall Mr. Kopp saying that this morning or today.
And do you have any concern in terms of reliance upon the Wood Mackenzie fuel forecast for the evaluation in this case?
Well, I haven't reviewed that because the company's analysis was based on the fuel prices from their RFP. I believe Mr. Kopp testified to that. What we did is we looked at more current prices. In particular, natural gas prices have come down. The projections, the long-term projections, the outlook for natural gas prices have come down from those forecasts that were done around 2009, which is my understanding is the vintage of the forecast in the IRP. So we updated the natural gas price forecast shortly before we did our analysis, which would have been September, October of 2011. I'm sorry.
And I think that testimony is similar to Mr. Kopp's in that gas prices have come down since 2009. Mr. Kopp also testified that although the prices for gas as well as for coal have come down during that period, they fell within the 20% sensitivity range that was used in the Burns and McDonald testimony. Do you recall his testimony
on
that point?
I believe he did say that.
And do you have any reason to question that conclusion based on any information that you have about current gas prices?
Well, I don't know if I would call it a question or conclusion, but I guess if you're in a state of the gas markets where prices are falling because of the development of shale gas, I mean, that's a quantum effect on the marketplace. And it's driven natural gas prices to, and not only current prices, but the outlook for natural gas prices to historic lows. So I think given that there's been what I'll call a quantum shift in the market, what we wanted to do was take the current market conditions as the base case and look at sensitivities plus or minus 20% over the sort of the latest forecast. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that in the IRP, the company took a 2009 forecast and did plus or minus 20%. And my new base case, based on very current prices, was still within that range. I would still prefer to look at the current prices with a sensitivity around it.
Thank you. I have nothing further, Your Honor.
Is Jeff Gonsacco?
I just have a question about the conditions. I'm seeing it, the condition on waiting for the South Dakota SIP to be accepted, slightly different than the condition on the mercury, the dollars associated with the mercury emissions. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I'd be happy to explain that if you'd like.
I don't need it. Maybe somebody else will ask for it. But on the waiting for EPA to approve the South Dakota SIP, were you envisioning a condition precedent or a condition subsequent?
I'm not sure I understand the difference, so maybe you could define those
well,
for me.
I think it's what you heard the companies talking about, which is waiting for the condition to be met in order for ADP to kick in versus allowing it to kick in subject to being going away if the SIP is not approved.
Well, I hadn't thought of it in those terms. My rationale behind suggesting that everybody wait until the final approval of and the appeal period has run out is that you'll now know exactly what you're building to. Before that plan's approved, we may think we have a good idea of what the EPA will or won't approve, but until they actually sign on the dotted line and publish the document, there is always a chance that a change could be made. And my concern is that during what hopefully will be a brief time period, that a whole lot of money not be spent and then find out, oh, wow, the SIP changed. So my thought was to not necessarily cease all project activities, but have some kind of a hiatus period where you would then wait for the final blueprint that you're building to.
I understand. I'm glad you clarified some. I did ask a couple of witnesses, and I'm not sure who now, but talking about the distinction between saying, yes, it's a good idea, or yes, it's prudent, versus it really doesn't have to be associated with money. Now, I know in your recommendation, you did make your recommendation up to a certain dollar figure and then give or take the 10%. But in theory, a commission can say something is prudent at this stage of the project, which would be in advance of the normal time, without associating it with any money. And a company can spend money whether or not they have an early prudence determination by the commission. Is that your understanding?
Well, I believe your question was, is it theoretically possible that a commission could issue such a decision? And, yes. Of course, the answer is yes. And so under what I believe your question was to the other witnesses was an acceptance that this is a good project, but it's $0.
Silence on the dollars.
I mean, or at silence on the dollars.
That's another possibility that, you know, we don't have to get into in detail here. But.
Okay. And I think that is a possibility, but I'm not sure what the company would do with that. We've heard the company say that they're going, or the applicants really, say that they're going to rely on the approval of the ADP to limit their sort of financial exposure after the fact. And I don't think that at $0, I'm not sure that gives them the comfort that they want. And, I mean, that raises a whole bunch of issues, but to answer your question as directly as I can, it could happen, it could be done, but I don't know what would happen next.
And so and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I want to be sure I understand. That brings us full circle to why your condition suggestion is really, I think, a condition precedent that the company not feel authorized, even though they don't need our authority, but not feel authorized to go spend any of that money until that rule is finalized.
That's correct. As I said earlier, my concern in devising that condition is that a large sum of money gets spent, and then we realize, oops, we don't have the right blueprints.
Okay. Thank you.
Questions by the commission. Commissioner Clark.
I have some just sort of general philosophy questions and bounce some ideas off you to the degree you feel comfortable just kind of opining on a few things. Have you had experience with advanced determination of prudence-type proceedings in other jurisdictions before, or is this kind of a new?
No, it's not new. It goes by different names. This is the first time I've heard it called an advanced determination of prudence, but in other jurisdictions, they require large energy projects, either new ones or retrofits, to obtain a certificate of public convenience and necessity, or a CPCN. And in some states, the granting of that piece of paper tantamounts to a determination of prudence that this project at this price is a good idea, and we're not going to go back and challenge it. Now, there are states that don't issue them. So, I think obviously it's a policy question for North Dakota as to whether they do or they don't, but it's not unheard of to either have it or not have it. Both exist.
Sure. And could you talk a little bit about the potential benefits that accrue to ratepayers through an advanced determination of some sort?
Well, the impact on there is an impact on ratepayers and an impact on the company. Obviously, the company, to the extent that they get a piece of paper that says, gee, it's a good idea to spend $500 million on an upgrade to a power plant built in 1975, they have some level of comfort that they will ultimately recover those costs, even if this is or isn't a rate-making proceeding. The benefits to ratepayers should accrue later on, because if all of the company's projects have been built subject to a granted ADP, the risk premium that the company should obtain in their authorized rate of return arguably should be lower.
Would it be both on the cost of capital side as well as what a future commission would determine with regard to its ROE?
Well, I think it would be appropriate. My experience is when a commission determines in a rate case what the allowable ROE would be, they have to take into effect many factors. But one of them that's typically done is a risk premium off a risk-free market investment. And so to the extent that the company, and I'll just use an example, let's say there was no ADP, and the company was still subject to, I believe, what Mr. Ugarud called a used and useful standard, where you build it and we'll tell you after the fact if it's the right thing or not. Now, clearly that's more risky than receiving an ADP, so you might authorize a slightly higher cost of capital with a higher risk premium under the used and useful scenario than you would under the ADP scenario.
Are you familiar with any states that have attempted to, maybe through the rulemaking process or through precedent, actually assign a value to that so that company management would have a sense going into its decision on how to approach investments, whether it be seeking an advanced determination or simply doing it the old way where companies make investments and later come in, where a commission says, well, you can come in for the advanced proceeding, but understand that this will be, for ROE purposes, treated in a certain way, whether it's regard to basis points that are knocked off of ROE or so on and so forth. So the company has a sense for that there is actually a trade-off here, and it's not a heads I win, tails you lose scenario.
Well, unfortunately, I know of no hard and fast calculation that would give you the answer that says the risk premium for a utility that has an ADP option is 1 or 100 basis points below what the rest of the world gets.
Right.
Where this typically comes into play is there's a range of a risk premium. And a commission, even if they agree on the range of the risk premium to be added, you need to decide where in the range you're going to be. And so if a lot of the risk has been taken away from the company, judgmentally they can be put in sort of a lower position on the range. But I'm not aware of any magic formula, unfortunately, that calculates it for you.
Okay.
I will say that if I could add, if I might, ROEs for allowed ROEs for utilities in the Northeast have dropped a lot since they exited the generation business.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah. So clearly, what they call the pipes and wires business, the delivery business, is far less risky business. So you can see that had these companies stayed in the generation business under a used and useful standard, which is what their ROE used to be set on, that's come down. That's come down a lot. But again, there's no magic formula, unfortunately.
Thanks. You had discussed a bit of your recommendation with regard to a contingency on the South Dakota SIP being accepted and finalized, and you walked through your rationale for that, which I thought made sense. In a similar vein, does it make any sense to recognize other risks that may exist in other states? And you were probably here for one earlier when we talked about some of the risks that may exist in Minnesota, and understanding that we have, as I mentioned, a bit of a track record with that particular state, and just from a public policy standpoint, coal has been difficult as an issue in Minnesota, and I think we've had the experience of we never know exactly what's going to fly and what won't in that particular state. Applying the same rationale that you used with regard to the SIP and ensuring that it really is the final one and that you won't find yourself in that situation that you had talked about where you say, oh, my gosh, it's changed and we've spent all this money. Would it make sense to have some sort of contingency on finalizing Minnesota's acceptance of this plan so that we also don't have a situation where the utilities spend all kinds of money and then they find out the rules have changed there?
Well, I think you definitely should consider that. I mean, it's always difficult when you have a utility with a regulated operation that spans two jurisdictions, because some jurisdictions may see eye to eye, but they may not, and they may issue different orders. Now, what I heard earlier today is perhaps the Minnesota schedule is ahead of this one, so you might get that order. I mean, you clearly wouldn't want to grant an ADP and then have Minnesota reject the AQCS. I mean, to me, that would be sort of a bad outcome. So I guess I would say yes, you should consider that.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
Mr. Kramer.
Just a couple. In your testimony, both your pre-filed testimony and then in questioning, you seem to qualify your agreement with the SCR technology with the fact that you always put it in the context of the South Dakota SIP. You seem to deliberately do that. Apart, judging just for a moment South Dakota's decision, and you do state that SCR is common for NOx, dealing with NOx, but do you believe it's necessary to meet the minimum or to meet the standard of the APA rule?
Well, unfortunately, the standard of the rule has an interpretation associated with it. I think the question is, could you get away with an SNCR and still comply with the rule? And the answer is, I think we looked through, I forget which of the company's witnesses, but it was Table 614, that kind of showed the data. I mean, the reason why we decided that the SCR was the preferred technology was the result of South Dakota. Now, we may not like it, but the plant's located there. And I will say that the company actually requested a different NOx control technology. As I read the filing, it appeared to me that – I keep saying the company. I should say the applicants. The applicants requested separated over-fire air as their preferred technology, which has the lowest capital cost. And the South Dakota DENR looked at it and said, gee, no, you know, we're going to approve or require an SCR. Now, that's still subject to EPA approval. Even if the DNER had accepted the company's original proposal of a SOFA. It's possible the EPA could have required an SCR anyway. But the fact that the SIP has what I would consider to be the technology that achieves the largest reduction in NOx emissions, and it's below the deemed threshold of cost per ton of NOx reduced, we expected that that would be the technology that would stick. And so we looked at it from a viewpoint of, you know, not necessarily whether we agreed with it or not, but the fact is that South Dakota, to us, appeared to have the right to make this decision. And the EPA has the right to come in and approve it or not. I don't know if that answered your question or not.
I think it does, but I guess I would maybe take one more whack at it and say, well, then what else could South Dakota agree to that the EPA would find suitable that might cost even more yet? And is what's the threshold for us saying, wait a minute, 65% of the buyers of this electricity are our consumers, and they're getting none of the benefit and all the cost. Why should I, as a North Dakota economic regulator, be punished because we're the reasonable ones?
Well, it's sometimes there's a saying that says, "Let no good deed go unpunished," and I guess this reflects the difficulty, really, in dealing with two jurisdictions, in that you can't control what's reasonable or not in South Dakota. And my concern would be that you looked at the South Dakota decision on the SCR and said, gee, I don't like that. I'm not going to grant an ADP. Well, then I think you might be denying, you may be even incurring more costs on ratepayers, because at the cost of the SCR, or including the cost of the SCR and the AQCS, it's still, slightly less expensive than alternative A. So I don't want to say maybe it is unfortunate, and maybe there's not a lot of control there, but I think you have to look at, given the hand you're dealt, what's in the best interest of the ratepayers of North Dakota. And if rejecting the South Dakota decision and therefore rejecting the ADP, if that's where you come down, then okay. But it seems to me that if you have to unfortunately swallow the SCR decision, that still may be the better outcome for North Dakota ratepayers. I'm sorry, I don't have a good way to finesse this.
You did very well. Thank you. just one other question. Are you familiar with any sort of general studies relating to possible negative consequences on legacy generation with the onslaught of all of this wind and the sort of load following of less dispatchable generation like coal, or is it too early to determine that given, again, wind's sort of youthfulness?
Well, no, I think the what I'll call the RTO operators, the MISOs, mm-hmm. the PJMs, the ISO New Englands, I think they are concerned. With a small level of wind in your supply portfolio, maybe you have lower concerns. But as the number gets bigger, I do think that the system operators that have to keep the lights on are concerned about what happens if we have too much of our portfolio tied up in what's referred to as intermittent resources. Mm-hmm. And, it may look good on paper, and it may look good in a production costing run, but what provisions do you need to keep the lights on if you're a system operator? So I think they're very concerned about it. Companies such as the RTOs are doing studies to see what happens, for example, if the wind suddenly stops blowing. What does that do as the generation fades down? What does that do to the system? What kind of operating reserves do you need to have, and where do you need to have them in order to be able to ride out these system disturbances? Because wind resources, like it or not, are different from conventional power plants. So they have a different impact on the system. So I don't think it's premature to be thinking about that at all.
Very good. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Anything further from the commission? Commissioner Cook? Follow up, Mr. Brown.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr. Gruelman. I'm sorry, I should have done the other way around. Mr. Grumman, Mr. Brown.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Nothing further.
All right. Rebuttal, Mr. Brown? No, certainly not.
So we have none, Your Honor.
Okay. Then, any closing statement, Mr. Brown?
Well, Your Honor, before we do that, we have been able to do fast recovery for what had been reserved for Exhibit 116.
Okay.
So these were the documents that have been requested earlier today from EPA. We have three of them to offer now. And I don't know what your pleasure would be, if you'd want to call back a witness to authenticate them, or if you would want us simply to offer them now.
No, they're received.
Okay.
They can be filed. Counsel, any objection to that? They're in the record as a late file exhibit. Whether you bring them in now or bring them in later, they're here.
And, Your Honor, copies have been made, so if you wanted me to distribute them, if I could approach,
sure.
Happy to do that now.
Indeed.
Thank you.
So sorry.
Thanks. Then no rebuttal, closing statement, Mr. Brown?
Your Honor, first of all, I'd just like to thank the commissioners and yourself for your time and patience in hearing our case today. We appreciate that very much. We think that we've been able to present a strong case, that the project is a reasonable and prudent one, and we ask that the commission would exercise its discretion and approve the request. Thank you very much.
Mr. Grumman?
Obviously, staff just likewise thanks the commission for their time and welcome the opportunity to help provide a better record. As far as our ultimate conclusions, I guess I'll reserve that for written final argument.
And Jeff Kotzak.
Nothing but thanks to everyone.
Closing statements from the commission. The commission chairman, Tony Clark.
Thanks to everyone for a good hearing. There's a lot of information here for the commission to sort through. I suspect over the next few weeks probably we'll go about setting a work session, which is typically what we do, to first have the first opportunity to discuss the case amongst ourselves and our advisory staff. I assume we'll probably wait for the transcript to do that, so however long that takes will probably be our timeline for our first opportunity to discuss it. But beyond that, thanks again. It was a good hearing, and look forward to having the opportunity to review the record further.
Mr. Kramer.
Yeah, thank you to everyone for a good hearing, and also appreciate the efficiency. While it looks like a lot of information, and it is a lot of information, oftentimes in cases like these we will go over all the same old information, and I appreciate the efficiency with which you examined the witnesses and avoided duplication where it wasn't necessary. As you can tell, we sort of grow a little bit weary of the tail wagging the dog with regard to other states, and so we probably dig a little deeper into some of other states' policies and its impact on our ratepayers a little more than perhaps other commissions do. But it's a sincere concern that we continue to have. I would also say, just for myself, with regard to this issue of advance prudence versus later prudence and the ADP law itself and the policy ramifications of all of that, we've been on both sides of this issue as a commission in the short time that the law has been in place. And while I might sometimes prefer to get the pay of a board member as opposed to a commissioner in making big investment decisions, I rather like the relationship, quite honestly. I rather like that that companies feel it important to come before us prior to these investments. And sometimes, sometimes I feel like we're a little bit of the cop-out, perhaps, but at the same time, these are important investments for companies, for investors, as well as for rate payers. And I guess I prefer to have a look at them beforehand rather than later. So just for what it's worth, thank you.
Commissioner Kalk?
Just thank you for your work today. And once again, thank you for preparing this document. Like I said, it was one of the better ones I've had a chance to go through, so I think between the whole crowd here. And the final thing, I just want to make an administrative note that Bob Gravelin, this may be his last official function before his retirement here in a few days. Is that correct, Bob? Thank you for your service.
Thank you, commissioners and council. Thank you very much. Specifically, let me say, Mr. Grumman and Mr. Brown, this is a little bit different way of handling the exhibits than we've done in the past. And as you recall from pre-hearing conference, I was a little skeptical, but let me say that this worked very well. Mr. Grumman, I recommend it for further hearings. Mr. Brown, to the extent you're back for further hearings, you should continue to do what you've done. Nothing I like better than seeing a notebook. Thank you very much. Of course, Council Noll, you'll be filing proposed findings, fact, conclusions, law, and order for judgment. Okay?
Can we, maybe just for efficiency's sake, perhaps we can get verse and then we could just.
Yeah, let's. Council should set that. You can work that out and come to an agreement that satisfies everyone, including commission advisory council, and that's great. Okay, this consolidated hearing in the matter of Montana Dakota Utilities Co. and Otter Tail Power Company applications for advanced determination.
We didn't let you off the hook.
Case numbers PU-11163 and PU-11165 is closed.
You followed through our discussion. Like, we're kind of off the Mohegans up here, selling out to all the green nose and all that stuff. I mean, it's like.
It's not a bad thing.
Well, but everywhere we go, the costs are going up all around us. North Dakota's got the lowest cost electricity in the country. And we're just fighting hard to keep it that way. And I don't know that we're going to win this.
Well, I don't know you are, but then, I mean, then you look at states like Rhode Island.
It's just sold out early. Well, no business, no nothing.
24 cents a kilowatt hour for deep water wind. I mean,
I'm amazed if we're done today.
Justice. They don't. They look at it and think, I like wind. I like wind, too.
But not at 24 cents.
Indeed, at 11:30. I told my wife at noon, I said,
I'm not sure you guys should
noon tomorrow.
Call yourself the last of the Mohegans. You should call yourself the pioneers and lead us out of this.
There's a reason.
That's
right.
That's right.
That's good. Anyway, thanks very much.
Okay. So you go back tomorrow, I presume?
Yeah.
I didn't know. I could have.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks.
Steph, you've got everything, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, I'm sure that you have, you've got the additional, that late filed exhibit, and so I think you're in shape.
Okay.
Well done.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to do it ourselves. Yeah, let's try to do that.